You ever get any false positives? Someone intends to kill his boss or his wife, but they never go through with it. How do the precogs tell the difference?
Have you ever retired a human by mistake?
Can't outrun your fate, David.
Precogs start to see what you intend to do. Only what you will do.
Kind of an audio scrapbook there. Some film clips from Minority Report, Blade Runner, Adjustment Bureau, all films inspired by the work of author Philip K. Dick. Dick died in 1982, only 53 years old, yet his legacy is only partly explained in those film clips. He's one of the novel's biggest fans, is with us in the studio today with another kind of scrapbook. Jonathan Lethem is the co-editor of the book The Exegesis of Philip K. Dick. He's the author of Fortress of Solitude, Motherless Brooklyn, and a number of other books. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning.
You know, it's great to have you back here. This is a huge tome. You can't see it, folks, but it is really a door into the mind of Philip K. Dick. What was this project like? How did you stumble upon it?
Well, I mean, I've been living with a kind of knowledge of this cache of papers, because it was just, you know, a giant mass of 8,000 scribbled and typewritten pages that sat in a garage in Sonoma for a long, long time. They were writings that Dick left behind when he died in 82, and he'd been doing them. He'd been accumulating this stuff for 8 years at that point. They're basically philosophical visions that he had, and the idea of making a book of it was sort of, you know, it was one of the great impossible projects.
And, you know, one of the things that it occurs to me, if I were to come upon a treasure like these papers that you found in Sonoma, California, or were known
yes,
to be in
right,
Sonoma, California. I mean, so much of the titles, the sentences of Philip K. Dick have wound up into the vernacular, have wound up being a part of the language.
Right.
Page per page, you don't know if it's the story that you're getting that is the value, the simple sentence, the phrase, even the drawings have a certain kind of clever, imaginative value.
Well, it's funny. I was listening to those film clips and thinking about what the relationship between this stuff and his storytelling really is. And in a way, it's almost as if this is a chance to peel back the skin of the stories and see the kind of the raw speculation, the raw philosophical fascination that lies beneath it. You know, this is his worldview on display.
Well, that's an interesting question comes to mind there. We're talking with Jonathan Lethem, co-editor of The Exegesis of Philip K. Dick. I'm pronouncing that right?
Yes. Absolutely.
You know, I don't think I've ever said the word exegesis until this morning.
I didn't know how I was supposed to say it.
Isn't that amazing? And again, that's a Philip K. Dick kind of thing. Come to this word. I love this word. You need to find it. The Exegesis of Philip K. Dick. Of course, Lethem is the author of Fortress of Solitude, Motherless Brooklyn, other books. Do you sense from this work that Dick himself understood that there was a huge continuity to his work? It wasn't just a bunch of great hits.
Well, I mean, that's a great description. One of the things that makes this book rewarding is if you've read his novels and become interested in them themselves, he's interpreting his own work and trying to use it as a lens to kind of understand his universe. And so it's I can't think of an example where a novelist has gone deeper into interpretation of his own novels, and that in itself is a very, very strange feature of this, you know, this writing.
When did you first understand that Philip K. Dick spoke to you as a writer?
Oh, gee, I was a teenager when I fell in love with his novels, and I read him kind of his work was consuming obsession for me when I was 16, 17, 18. I think I'd at that point laid hands on everything that was in print and read it in very, very short order. And, you know, that only developed and grew and deepened as I reread the books and as I began to try to write myself. My first few novels are very strongly indebted to his works. I was aping him, basically. So he was
– You were ripping him off.
He was my gateway drug.
That's wild. You know, I describe him in a sense as this sort of psychological Dostoevsky of sci-fi, in the sense that he really is putting you in the mind of someone – faced with an extraordinary predicament that involves the way the world has evolved forward 100,000
years.
That's
great. Yeah. I always think that the distinguishing feature of his work is the commitment, the level of immersion of the characters and the writer in the situation that he's thought up. Lots of people can make up wild, surreal, paranoid scenarios, but Dick invested every stake. Everything was at risk for him. It was all there.
Do you think you guys would have hung out? if he'd lived. I mean, you've immersed yourself in these papers.
Yeah, I've spent a lot of time imposing myself on this guy, and he has no choice but to hang out with me since he's gone. I don't know. You know, I'd love to have had the chance to meet him. I had that fantasy when he was still alive when I was first discovering his work, but who knows? He was a complicated guy. He loved attention, and he was very welcoming, but he could also be very thorny and very treacherous to try to stay friends with. So who knows?
We're talking about The Exegesis of Philip K. Dick. It's edited by Pamela Jackson and Jonathan Lethem, who's my guest this morning. Describe a story in the process of putting this together where it felt more like a puzzle, where you had something that you said, wow, where does this go? And then you went, oh, I figured it out.
Well, yeah, this was literary detective work on a lot of levels because he left this stuff completely unsorted. There's no page numbering. You can't put it in chronological order. I should say Pamela Jackson took the brunt of this. She was the hands-on editor who really made some sense out of the chaos. But what's interesting about that part of the project is that it mirrors what Dick himself was doing in the writing. He's trying to take the chaos of reality, of his experience of the universe, and put it into some kind of order, and mostly failing. I mean, the book represents an endless series of restarts. Every morning he gets up and he thinks, no, 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 throw it all out. Here's how everything works. And so he kind of begins the book 100 times. And so what we did was just try to embrace the best material, distill it, take out the repetitious stuff, and, you know, bring it into a framework where you could approach it. It's not a book that reads like a narrative. It doesn't get anywhere. It just, you know, it's an endless meditation on existence.
In the end, does that meditation give us a glimpse of a world far into the future that he imagined where we are headed? Or is it a look back at a life which, in a sense, might be sad and unfinished in the end?
Well, I think it's all of those things. It does have visionary sequences in it, and you can take elements of this and project them into kind of the most amazing unwritten Philip K. Dick novels. It's also very, very mournful and retrospective. It's about, in some ways, it's about a writer failing to grapple with his materials and just being, you know, drowning inside them on a daily basis. And it's brave, but also kind of tragic. It's also really quite a scholarly work. He became in the last part of his life, in his attempt to nail this stuff, you know, he was studying Aramaic. He was reading the Gnostic Gospels. He was gathering every piece of material he could to try to bring to bear on this, you know, these inklings he was having about the world.
Finally, before we go, is there something you found in that treasure trove? And I can't imagine it's just one thing where you said, oh, man, guy's a genius. The stuff like this just drops out of his head.
Yeah, well, there are lyrical flights in it where suddenly it becomes visionary, it becomes literary, and you just see the writer taking over. And the language soars, and those are the moments I lived for as an editor.
The dreaming of electric sheep moments.
Right.
Jonathan Lethem is the co-editor of this huge book, and it's an amazing immersion, The Exegesis of Philip K. Dick. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You can join in on this conversation, any conversation you hear on the program. Visit our website, thetakeaway.org. We'll continue our coverage of the allegations of sexual harassment by GOP presidential candidate Herman Cain. We'd love to know your connection to Philip K. Dick. If you have a story or artifact to share with us, you know how to reach us, 8778-MY-TAKE. What are your experiences with the workplace misconduct, speaking of Herman Cain? Earlier, Farai Chidea had this to say on the subject.
If you're a woman, if you look at all pulled together when you are making a claim about how someone assesses your sexuality, it's actually viewed as a demerit against you. It has so much to do with the structure of how gender is perceived.
How do you perceive this story? 8778-MY-TAKE. I'm John Hockenberry. Celeste Headlee is out this week on assignment. This is The Takeaway.
A lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.